Washington.
He still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables.
Look for Donald Trump apologizing to John McCain for saying he wasn't a hero. Oh, did Donald Trump apologize for calling women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting?
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about last night's vice presidential debate. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. My guests are James Wright, D.C. political and Capitol Hill reporter for the Afro-American newspaper, and Eric Easter, editorial director of the Urban News Service. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Basket of deplorables, campaign of insults. Are both candidates guilty, James?
Yes. Let me just say that I would agree that basket of deplorables was not the proper terminology that Secretary Clinton should have used, even though it may be somewhat accurate, but I won't get into that. Remember 20 years ago when she talked about super predators? So sometimes she does tend to veer off. But let me just say that in terms of basket of deplorables, I think Kane responded well, about as well as you could to that.
Mm-hmm. James.
Eric, excuse me.
No, I think that, if you have to compare insult to insult, then Trump is the king of that. I mean, that's something he's been doing all his career. He's extended it into the presidential campaign. And that's one of the main things about his temperament that's concerning. Who do you really have as president? Somebody who gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning and wants to tweet out something to a former Miss Universe. You know, it's an odd set of behaviors that is coming. I think the guy is, you know, having a nervous breakdown as we watch. It's only a matter of minutes.
Back to the phone lines. Nicole, calling from Maryland. What's on your mind, Nicole?
Hi, good evening.
How are you?
My point on that is, with the debate last night, I don't think McCain came out to, like, be angry. He just wanted answers, and he wanted answers based on what everybody else was thinking. And Pence was just not given that. So basically, I don't think it changed a lot for people last night. It's just that he wanted answers and he was not getting it. So that's where the aggression came in for him, because Trump wasn't answering questions. Pence was answering questions, which he would hope that Pence would have answered the question. But all he did was cover more for Trump. So they're both the same. So I don't think it changed a lot for people last night. I really don't.
Okay, Nicole, thank you so much. James, what do you think about that? That we, before the break, I asked Eric about that. What about this apparent divide after the debate last night between Pence's point of views, his political leanings, his philosophies, and Donald Trump?
Well, keep in mind that Donald Trump is, with all due respect, relatively new to the Republican Party. And keep in mind also that Donald Trump has not held elected office. So as a result, you're going to have that schism between the two, because I'll give Mike Pence credit. He was here in Washington for six terms. And by the way, he supported D.C. having a vote in the U.S. Congress. But we don't talk about that.
Oh, well, then there's that. OK.
We don't talk about that. And the thing about it is that I think that's just natural because of who you have and the experiences that they bring. And it's interesting you bring that up, because you would think that Donald Trump would try to become a more political and move over to the GOP establishment, which he has not done.
Okay.
Because that hasn't won for him yet. I mean, that he's gotten this far doing the exact opposite. So there's no reason to change, in his opinion.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lewis calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Lewis. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine.
I just want to make a comment on the debate last night. I think McCain won. And it should change a few minds, because you have to look at Pence and McCain. They will step in if something happens to the president. Whoever is there will step up and represent the country. So you look at those two, and who do you think would best represent the country if the president should go down. So we have to look at that really hard, too.
Mm-hmm.
Not just them digging up their running mate. Do you want who? Which one you want to represent the country if needed?
Okay.
Thank you.
Lewis, thank you. You make a great point. Let's go to Chuck calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Go right ahead, Chuck.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to say that I thought that Pence won the debate. Unfortunately, by the way that Kane was trying to engage the conversation to have Pence defend Trump's actions, I thought Pence was just very, very good at just dodging questions. And though Kane had more facts on his side and he's with the better ticket, he didn't come across as presidential to me. If I was in a discussion with somebody who was responding, interrupting the same way, and that's the same critique that you'll say about Trump, you'll say this person did not show composure. And I actually liked Tim Kaine as a political figure, but I didn't think he gained any points in that debate. And I think I agree 100% with, if you heard it on the radio, he would have had a better chance, but I thought Pence came across presidential, and I think he's setting himself up for a run in 2020.
Go ahead, James. You've got something to say. Go ahead.
You know, one of the things that that has been said about Tim Kaine, and I don't agree with this, is that he's a nice guy and that he's not aggressive and that he needed to show that he was a bit of a pit bull. I don't agree with that because you don't become mayor of Richmond, Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, Governor of Virginia, and Senator by being somebody people can walk over. I think what he wanted to do was to show that he has that toughness, which all of us know he had up here knows he has it, and he wanted to show that on a national level.
Before Chuck, thank you so much for your phone call. Before I go to Dave, I need to bring this up because this is really kind of flying under the radar. And this is something I think a lot of people need to be aware of. There is a symbol that kind of popped up. I was watching CNN right before the debate when the anchors were standing outside and having this discussion at Longwood.
Right at Longwood.
Yeah, at the university, and someone held up a sign, and it was a sign of a green frog. And for those of you who may have noticed that some demonstrators or people in the background during some of the Trump rallies or otherwise hold up this sign of a green frog, that symbol, Pepe, the frog, is a white nationalist symbol. And that symbol was retweeted by Donald Trump Donald Trump Jr. Thank you of a meme that said the deplorables, meaning what Hillary Clinton said with David Duke and Donald Trump's face on, and of course, Pepe the Frog. Talk to me a little bit about the significance of this kind of slipping in, Eric, and the fact that a lot of people, particularly minorities, African-Americans, are not familiar with this.
Right. So Pepe the Frog was a frog in a cartoon. It was a relatively racist depiction, but it was, you know, within the context of fun in the particular cartoon, sort of pulled out by different groups as, you know, Homer Simpson and other folks have been pulled out by other crowds for different reasons, but pulled out for whatever reason by the Aryan groups around the country.
Alt-white.
Exactly.
Alt-right
folks.
Yeah.
And used in their imagery and put on posters and you know, used with, you know, racist sort of sloganeering underneath it. So this frog popping up on posters, you know, is now, you know, it's become sort of the de facto symbol. The cartoonist, you know, completely rejects it, you know, since it just happened under his watch. He can't really control what happens to his image in that way. But it speaks to this undercurrent of, you know, this sort of Aryan, you know, let's vote in Donald Trump and get rid of everyone, you know, the immigrant, this hyper xenophobic attitude that's starting to happen. I was in a discussion with a group of Jack and Jill parents of anybody. I mean, folks sitting there talking about, all right, who's got guns in their house? Mm-hmm. And who's collecting water, you know, if this guy wins? And, you know, whose house do we go to, you know, if something goes down. You know, these are the conversations that people are starting to have about what happens if a Trump victory happens. Not so much about what Trump does, but what Trump sparks and what a win like that says to the crazies out here who are supporting that basket of deplorables, these folks who have sort of jumped onto his campaign and which he has sort of taken pains not to deny. I mean, it's easy enough to say, you know, I'm against David Duke, I'm against these other folks, which he has not, you know, it seems that he's you know, he's actively tried not to say anything about their support.
You know, remember back in 2008 with Reverend Wright?
Mm-hmm.
And Obama gave that speech in Philadelphia where he talked about race relations. That was presidential. What Donald Trump has not done and he's not going to do, he is not going to do that type of speech denouncing white supremacy, the Aryan groups, et cetera. Now, yes, he has made very soft comments about not wanting David Duke's support, et cetera, et cetera. But we need him to come out and do a Obama-esque speech in Philadelphia in 2008 talking about America being one country.
And here's the other thing that Eric said that I found interesting about that conversation, because in 2008, there were a lot of white people who were talking about stocking up water, mm-hmm. buying guns. Gun sales increased
exactly.
exponentially. And you saw the rise of militia groups then because they knew, rightly so, that the world was coming to an end and that all the black folks and all the brown folks were just going to just run amok and the economies were going to collapse and it was going to start raining cats and dogs and, you know, and the whole bit. Well, we see that obviously that is not what has happened. So, you know, but certainly, you know, it seems that this cycle is beginning to repeat itself now that we may have, that we do have, rather, and an anti-Obama who is now the Republican nominee. I just find that, you know, the whole thing interesting. But just a piece of information for you about Pepe the Frog. Don't think that it's just something cute when you happen to see it on TV and during one of those kinds of rallies. Be aware of what it is that you're seeing during the course of this campaign. I want to go quickly back to the phone lines. Dave, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Dave. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to, you know, just say a few things. I want to comment on two things real quickly.
Go ahead.
Our presidential candidates, we don't have any. We're standing out here with no one to really represent America here, and we're caught up talking about vice presidents. And that's all I'm really going to say on that issue. But I want to go to our police issue
mm-hmm.
as the second comment. We're the reason that we're having people shooting, police shooting people that they're trying to either arrest, question, or subdue in some way is because in America, we aren't paying a high amount of money for this talent. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I'm an intelligent person, okay? And I'm going to tell you right now. There's no way that I would go out there and perform that job for anything less than $125,000 a year, starting pay. And if you had me out there doing that job for that amount of money, no one's going to get shot for any other reason than they pointed a deadly weapon at my face, and I had no other choice.
But is money? But is money, you know, the issue? Because certainly in small towns, for example, and small cities, I think that is a truly valid argument. Starting salaries, obviously, here in the District of Columbia for police officers is $50,000. But we know in Baltimore and D.C. and other big cities that they make well over six figures when you're talking about or near that, at least when you're talking about overtime and all of the other things that they make. So but, you know, with your life on the line, is money the issue?
I don't know that it's money the issue. I think what he's saying is that you're not getting the quality of recruit.
Aha.
And even in D.C., where the pay might be, you have a lot of folks still coming in from West Virginia, you know, from Southern Virginia, who people who do not live right here in the district, who are coming in and trying to presumably protect people who, you know, who they don't know, mm-hmm. who they've never lived among,
right.
And who they are afraid of. Mm-hmm. So that's when you get this issue. But certainly police, I think, all across the country are having issues in terms of recruiting serious quality candidates.
Dave, thank you for that fascinating point, and I appreciate your phone call. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Joan from Baltimore, and then we're going to talk about what's happening in the Caribbean with Hurricane Matthew and the implications of that. We'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. We're at the Reporters Roundtable, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Joan, calling from Baltimore. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind?
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering, when I be looking at the what's going on with the candidates today, I can see that the Republicans, they just out and out just lie. They just say things that they know is not true. And I don't see where people are calling them out on the things that they know that they are lying about. And then another thing that I have that I really don't like what's going on with the fact that all of the Republican surrogates is out there for Trump. You know, when you ask them a question, they never answer the question. They always throw Hillary and Barack Obama, you know, up in the end. News reporters, they are not calling them out on it. Instead of them saying, you know, that's not what I asked you. You went off script. You went off, you know, to another topic. But you're not answering the questions that I asked. And they never go back.
Well, hold on, Joan. Joan, I beg to differ. As, you know, as a news junkie and everybody sitting at this table is, I would say that reporters have been vehement in taking both party candidates to task about telling the truth and being candid. I think that what we're beginning to see or have been seeing throughout this entire campaign is that probably unlike any other time in modern election history, we're dealing with candidates that do not care if they are being called to task, and an electorate that also does not care about the truth, but only about their candidates and what they want. Eric.
I don't know if you saw the article in the Post the other day about this woman in Pennsylvania and what she thought about Obama, you know, that
I saw it, but I didn't read it.
You know,
she was sitting at the kitchen table saying somebody who thinks like me, right?
Could not be told that Obama is not gay, that Michelle is not a man, that, you know, every rumor that you, and no one could possibly change her mind. You have an entire electorate with that same feeling, probably on both sides, but certainly on the Trump side. And so the edge here in this race is absolutely going to be, you know, those folks in the middle, those folks who haven't taken a side either way, and what they decide to do when they get in the voting booth. I would argue that there are not enough Republicans who could you know, bring Trump to a victory, that the numbers just don't bear it out. The people you have to worry about are those folks in the middle who again, how could you imagine that anyone has not taken some side at this point, but those folks who are still on the fence?
Well, one of the problems we have is there's been a decline in civic participation. And as a result of the decline in civic participation, they're not participating in their political spectrum, even in their own towns or even in their states. They're not voting at the level that they need to. So the lady that you read about in the Post sitting at her coffee table saying that Michelle Obama's a man and Obama's gay and all that kind of crazy stuff, they really don't know any better. You still have a lot of Americans who believe that Obama is a Muslim. I mean, this type, and they don't do the research to find out otherwise. That is what the real problem is.
And I think that saying that reporters are not calling the candidates Trump or Clinton or or Pence or Kane or whomever it happened. It could be the guy running for dog catcher in your community. I think that reporters are doing it. We have seen the New York Times do it. We have seen the Washington Post. We've seen it on MSNBC and CNN. We've even seen it on CNBC for that matter. But the reality is that they ask the question. They don't get the answer. They ask the question again. They don't get the answer. I watched Mika Brzezinski one morning go toe to toe with Mike Pence on TV for almost 8 minutes, asking him the same question, and he never answered the question. How do you call someone to task without imploring violence, forcing them to answer the question and beating them with a wet noodle, if they're just not going to do it? And I think it's not so much the reporters. I think it's that the reporters ask, the candidates don't answer, and nobody cares that they don't. Right. Joan, thank you so much for bringing that up. I want to switch gears real quick because we need to talk about the weather. because it affects everyone. We have a Category 3 hurricane in the Caribbean. It has moved over Cuba, making landfall last night. We have reports of upwards of some 19 to 24 people killed between Cuba, Haiti, the Dominican Republic. It's heading towards, you know, the Bahamas. I have family in the Bahamas, and we've not been able to talk to them on the phone. But on yesterday, my mother was able to text them. They say they're okay. They have hurricane shutters and the like. But the reality is this is a monster storm, and it portends some really dark times for Haiti, particularly some, where are we now? Now some 6 years after that horrific horrific earthquake in Haiti. What does this mean for black folks, James, in the Caribbean once this storm passes through?
You know, why do I get this strange feeling that if the Caribbean was populated with non-people of color, why do I get the feeling that after this storm passes through, there would be immediate aid from the powers that be in this world, the United Nations, people like that, in order to repair the country, to rebuild it, and in terms of infrastructure? I think you're not going to see that, even though you should see that because of the damage that's going to take place because of the way the world at this particular time is situated politically and financially.
I think the question isn't what folks are doing now. You have to put it in perspective because you mentioned 6 years ago, the earthquake. Mm-hmm. $13 billion spent in Haiti in 6 years. $13 billion. Yet people are still living in tents, living in camps. You know, an earthquake a hurricane is not a bad thing if you're living in a house, you know, that's built well. But yet, 6 years later, you still have more than 85,000 people still living in encampments without running water, living in tents. Bill Clinton running the show down there, USAID, the UN, everyone you can name, money going to NGOs. A $5 million feasibility study went into paying contractors to see if they could build a port to create jobs. At the end of that $5 million, they said no and walked away. $5 million spent and not spent on building homes. 900 homes were built in the entire time. 15,000 were promised. 900 homes were built in 6 years. So those are the kinds of numbers. Where is all that money? Where did it go? It's not so much that a hurricane's coming. Hurricanes come every year. Why isn't the infrastructure being built, particularly in Haiti? But then when you extend out, the same things are happening.
And I think the thing that's interesting is that here we are some 6 years later, and just from the pictures that we've seen on television in Haiti, I will tell you, having gone to Haiti a year after the earthquake in 2011 to report on the aftermath of that earthquake, nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. Nothing has changed at all in 5 years from 2011 to 2016. And so, yes, I think that is a very valid question. What has happened, with the money? Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and it remains that way. And
it is paying a 300-year-old price for going for its independence.
Right.
Well said. Well said. Right. And even as we move through past Haiti, past the Dominican Republic, through the Bahamas, and certainly prayers go out to those folks there. What does this mean for, you know, South Florida? And, you know, could we see a Hurricane Katrina for South Florida? The governor is taking this very, very seriously. And I will tell you, also having covered Hurricane Andrew, being in South Florida 3 days after Hurricane Andrew hit during the early 1990s, the devastation that could hit that area can be just as horrendous. Mm. So just a thought there. I want to thank you, gentlemen. Gosh, time does fly. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, for spending some time with us at the Reporters Roundtable. James Wright and Eric Easter. Love to have you guys come back. Hey, guess what? There are still two more debates to go. As a matter of fact, presidential debate coming up on Sunday. Certainly looking forward to that. So again, thank you both very much for participating in the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 on this Wednesday, October 5th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.